is why was he shot down the other day? I'm gonna say he'd seen.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to host the class Hip Hop Past, Present, and Future, and Your Place in It with Mike Crenshaw on Saturday, January 27th at 4 p.m. at KBOO in Portland. This class will explore hip hop history locally and nationally, KBOO hip hop programming, how hip hop influences art, culture, and political consciousness, rhyme writing and production, and how liberation struggles have contributed to hip hop culture. Again, that's Hip Hop Past, Present, and Future and Your Place in It with Mike Crenshaw on Saturday, January 27th at 4 p.m. at KBOO, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
February the 13th, 1983, KBOO Community Radio held an open house to celebrate moving into a building that we could come to own here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Join us Tuesday, February 13th, for the 35th anniversary of the open house moving in party. Food, drink, tours, and memories will be on hand as we celebrate 35 years in this building and 50 years of KBOO. That's the 35th anniversary open house, Tuesday, February 13th, 5 to 8 p.m. here at your community radio station, KBOO Portland. More information can be found at 50yearsofkboo.fm.
KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. The fate of Brazil's upcoming presidential race hangs in the balance as the most popular candidate, Lula da Silva of the Workers' Party, and also former president of Brazil, faces a decision on a corruption charge against him that many argue is flimsy. Is this the latest step in the undermining of Brazil's democracy? What does this mean for the future of the government and of the Brazilian people who are currently facing austere cuts to health care, attacks on labor rights, and the removal of their safety net? Our guest is expert in Latin America and economist Mark Weisbrot of the Center for Economic Policy and Research. And Donald Trump is siding with Whirlpool and other U.S. corporations and have slapped tariffs on up to 50% of imported washing machines. He has also slapped tariffs on imported solar cells and modules. South Korea, along with China, will be hit by the tariffs. Now, a big winner in all of this is Whirlpool Corporation. And what many don't know about Whirlpool is that their international headquarters are based in Benton Harbor, a black poverty-stricken community. They play a huge role in local politics, and they have been up against the black community for land grabs, silencing local black leaders, and more. Here to give us the latest, we speak with the Reverend Edward Pinckney of the Black Autonomy Community Organizations in Benton Harbor. And after years of organizing by Black Lives Matter Los Angeles, challenging the lack of accountability in the Los Angeles Police Department for the hundreds of lives that have been lost at the hands of police officers, LAPD Charlie Beck has finally announced that he's, quote unquote, retiring early. What does this mean for the future of the movement for our Campaigners for Black Lives series? We're joined today by Black Lives Matter LA, Dr. Melina Abdullah. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
I'm Max Pringle with these headlines. President Trump is headed to the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, and top U.S. cabinet members said today that the United States is committed to free and fair trade while bracing itself for possible retaliation from China over new tariffs. Days after Trump backed new tariffs on imported solar energy components and large washing machines, his combative Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross conceded that China could respond by imposing its own tariffs on U.S. products. Ross told reporters, quote, "In terms of any trade action you take, there's always potential for retribution or retaliation, and that's up to the Chinese to decide," unquote. Ross insisted that the U.S. government is not protectionist and that the tariffs are meant to deal with what he termed inappropriate behavior by other countries. Many in the Trump administration think that much of the global trading system is rigged against the U.S. and that many countries have not been playing fair, using unfair methods to gain a competitive advantage. The administration's America First strategy that helped Trump win the presidency has already seen the U.S. withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a trade deal with 11 countries, and seek a renegotiation of the North American Free Trade Agreement with Canada and Mexico. CNN is reporting that President Trump is inclined to allow the memo spearheaded by Representative Devin Nunes that alleges FBI abuses of surveillance laws to be released if the House Intelligence Committee approves it being declassified. The memo has become a conservative rallying cry, with Republicans on Capitol Hill demanding that the document be released. Democrats argue the effort to declassify the memo is the latest attempt by conservatives to damage Special Counsel Robert Mueller's investigation. The White House disputed to CNN that the president has made a decision. White House Principal Deputy's Press Secretary Raj Shah said there will be a full interagency and national security review and that the president will be advised before making a decision. White House Press Secretary Sarah Sanders declined on Tuesday to directly say whether the Trump administration backs releasing the Nunes memo, but did say that they, quote, certainly support full transparency. Republican Representative Charlie Dent of Pennsylvania told CNN he's against efforts to undermine the Justice Department's investigation.
I do believe that the men and women of the FBI are good, honorable, professional people. I'm sure there are some bad apples, but we have a process to deal with that. I think it's important that we not undermine the American public's confidence in the Justice Department and the FBI.
The memo is the four-page summary of Nunes' investigation into the FBI and Justice Department's use of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA. Trump, his White House, and Republicans on Capitol Hill have repeatedly sought to undermine Mueller's investigation ever since he was named special counsel in May. Militants stormed the offices of Save the Children in eastern Afghanistan today, killing two security guards and a civilian and triggering a shootout with police that was still underway more than 8 hours later. That's according to provincial officials and the organization. The Islamic State group claimed responsibility for the attack, which took place in Jalalabad. Authorities said the assault started with a suicide bomber who detonated his explosives at the provincial offices of Save the Children, a non-governmental organization. Police reportedly killed two other attackers, and at least 26 people, including six police officers, were wounded. Both the Taliban and ISIS are active in eastern Afghanistan. Nearly 8,000 volunteers are fanning out as part of a three-night effort to count homeless people in most of Los Angeles County. The count, organized by the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, kicked off from various deployment sites Tuesday and continues today and tomorrow. The data gathered are used to help officials request and allocate funding for homeless services. The California parents accused of torturing their children will appear in court today as prosecutors ask a judge to bar them from contacting their kids. The court proceeding is the latest step by authorities to sever ties between David and Louise Turpin and their 13 children, who are between ages 2 and 29 years old. Riverside County prosecutors are seeking a protective order that would prohibit the Turpins from having any contact with the siblings. The severely malnourished children were found earlier this month in squalid conditions. Some had been chained to their beds. I'm Max Pringle. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. We are now going to turn to a south of the border segment because a key presidential election is coming up in Brazil, the largest nation in Latin America. Now, since the election of President Hugo Chavez, so many governments in Latin America and in Central America shifted to the left. We saw that in Argentina, in Brazil, as well as in other places. But since then, the United States and other Western powers have been quietly working to undermine those governments and to support opposition to them. So in recent years, we're seeing right-wing U.S.-supported politicians creeping back into power across the region. And a key example of these changing tides is in Brazil. In 2003, Lula da Silva, known as Lula, became the president of Brazil under the Workers' Party. And his presidency was a shift to the left for Brazil after leaning right and aligning with U.S. conservative policies for so very long. Now, after leaving office, Lula was and still is a popular figure, the Guardian recently called a hero of the global left. And President Obama once called the most popular politician on earth. So what is going on now with Lula? We're going to be discussing all of this with Mark Weisbrot. But first, let us go to a clip from France 24. Lula now wants to run for the presidency again, but there's been a major campaign against him for so-named corruption that his supporters are saying is actually a flimsy case.
A celebrity welcome for Brazil's former president. Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva has refused to let his ongoing corruption trial hamper his campaign for Brazil's presidential elections this October. He's out to convince voters he's the victim of a witch hunt, accusing federal judges and police of lying.
I am not above the law. I don't want to be above the law, because all what was done to combat the corruption in this country was done by Dilma and by me.
But for his critics and Brazilian officials, Lula's political career is tainted by corruption scandals. Prosecutors say he granted favors to construction giant OAS in return for a newly renovated beachside apartment. He's also been accused of receiving bribes in a corruption scandal involving state oil company Petrobras. Lula's conviction is a part of Operation Car Wash, Latin America's largest corruption investigation. A popular left-wing politician, the former Brazilian president says he's being attacked for his past political success. He has been credited with lifting millions of people out of poverty and spurring economic growth between 2003 and 2010. Even after last year's trial, he remains a political favorite, and he's currently leading the polls for October's presidential election.
All righty. So let's welcome Mark Weisbrot, co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research in Washington, D.C. He is an author. He's an analyst. He's an expert in the region. His opinion pieces have appeared in the New York Times, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, and most major U.S. newspapers. Mark, welcome back.
Thanks, Margaret. Thanks for inviting me.
Okay, so, Mark, there's been a mess in terms of politics in Brazil, not the only place, but in Brazil over the past period. We saw what many called a soft coup against Brazil's former president and a colleague of Lula, Dilma Rousseff, who was democratically elected twice but then impeached. Just give us the lay of the land before we get into the specifics about the charges against Lula and what that might be about. Just remind us again about the whole thing that has happened that really pushed the Workers' Party out of power, which is Lula's party also.
Yes. Well, in 2016, so Lula was elected in 2002, took office at the beginning of 2003, and then he was reelected again in 2006, and then Dilma, his successor, was elected in 2010. And as you said before, was reported here, by 2014 they had accomplished quite a bit after the economy had grown almost not at all for 23 years before Lula was elected. You had, on a per capita basis, it was almost nothing. And they reduced poverty by 55% and extreme poverty by 65%. They had record low levels of unemployment. They had raised the real inflation-adjusted minimum wage by 76%. And so and that's why he left office, that's why Lula left office at, with an 80% approval rating and one of the most popular politicians in the world. And Dilma did okay, but the economy did go into recession in 2014, and that's where the right, took advantage of that. And they impeached her, even the federal prosecutor said there was no crime. She was impeached, and because of not very good reporting, a lot of people think she was impeached for corruption, because there was a big corruption scandal, as was mentioned. But in fact, she was not charged with any corruption at all in the impeachment. She was just impeached for an accounting maneuver, which is very much like which all the previous presidents had done and governors had done without consequences. And it was very much like, in 2013 when the Republicans threatened to shut down the government over the debt ceiling, and the Obama administration kept using accounting maneuvers to say, well, we haven't hit the debt ceiling yet. It was that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And so they impeached her and removed her from office in August of 2016. And so then they went after Lula because he can run for president again after being out of office. The election is in October, and he's the front runner.
Right.
In fact, he's way up. He's way ahead of anybody else.
Yeah. And before we get to Lula, just to give our listeners some context here. Now, the Workers' Party was founded in 1980, opposed to a military dictatorship that had ruled Brazil since a military coup in 1964. And it took really, they have an anti-imperialist, anti-U.S. control over Latin America politics, right? So they were seen as a threat to the establishment. It took 23 years and four elections until the first Workers' Party candidate, Lula da Silva, took office in, as you say, Mark, in 2003. So since then, the Brazilian conservative establishment, I'm sure in collaboration with foreign powers, and of which we know likely who is involved in that, have been working to retake power. So,
Yes, I think that's important, especially talking about it here in the U.S., because the United States was involved in activities against really almost all the left governments that were elected in the period that you mentioned in the 21st century, beginning in the late 90s, in Venezuela, Bolivia, Argentina, Ecuador, Brazil, Uruguay, and Paraguay. So the U.S. used its influence and power in all of these cases. And in Brazil, you can see it in the impeachment last year. You know, their impeachment process is kind of like ours. So the lower house of Congress voted to impeach Dilma in the spring. It wasn't last year, it was 2016. In the spring of 2016, and 2 or 3 days after the vote, the leader of the impeachment effort in the Senate, Aloysio Nunes, who was head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee there, came to the U.S. and met with the number three person in the State Department, Tom Shannon, who was in charge of Latin America at the time and is involved in a number of nefarious activities in Latin America. And, you know, the meeting was a very obvious signal from the United States government to everybody who understands these things, that they approved of this parliamentary coup. And then John Kerry went there August 5th of 2016 and held a press conference with the acting foreign minister, because Dilma was not yet removed from office, and did this whole conference, press conference, about how he was looking forward to this relationship in the future with the government. And so it was another way of showing support for the removal of this democratically elected president. And so this was really a way of the traditional ruling elite of Brazil removing this government, because they couldn't win for 14 years or 12 years at the ballot box.
Right. And so what is happening now is the actually today, a Brazilian appellate court is to decide whether to confirm or suspend a conviction against Lula, who has been convicted. Tell us about this. You know, what is he, you know, what evidence is there against him? I mean, what is all of this about? One of Lula's attorneys said Lula isn't being prosecuted, but persecuted. Told that to the Huffington Post.
Yes, and in fact, there's a poll from last year showing that 42.7% of the people in Brazil believe that he's being persecuted by both the media and the judiciary. And one of the reasons it looks like that is there's no real evidence. I mean, he's accused of accepting this apartment or the remodeling of an apartment as a bribe from this big construction company called OAS, which was involved in the this big bribery scandal. And the thing is, they did not present any documentary evidence of that he actually, or his wife, actually accepted this apartment. Now, they had evidence from emails in the company that they wanted to give this to him, but there was no evidence he didn't have title. They never stayed in the apartment. They never used the apartment. There was no nothing to show that he actually took a bribe, and so they didn't really prove this. They didn't prove the case at all, and it all relied. The only real evidence they had was from this one construction company executive, who was himself. You know, he took a plea to bribery. And the interesting thing about that is, you know, first of all, they reduced his sentence by more than 80%. He originally had 6 years, 16 years, and they reduced it by more than 80% in order, in exchange for his testimony. And the worst thing is that at first he gave them the same story that Lula had, and then they cut off his plea bargaining until he changed his story to say what they want. And they can do that there. They have this terrible system that was inherited from Portugal under the dictatorship there, where the judge who investigates the case is the prosecutor and the trial judge.
Yeah.
And he can also hold people in jail until they say what he wants. So so that's why so many people don't believe that this case is legitimate. And now you have an appellate court which is kind of stacked. I mean, the head judge of the three-judge panel that's going to decide. He's already said that the publicly that the trial judge's decision was impeccable, and his chief of staff posted something on her Facebook page saying that Lula should go to prison.
Oh my goodness!
So the impartial court that's going to decide whether to hold this sentence against Lula. So it's pretty bad. And if it wasn't Brazil, see, and this is where you can again see the U.S. You know, which side the government here is on, because the media here, and of course the government is not saying anything about it. Imagine if this was happening in any of the left governments, this would be a huge scandal.
Yeah, and Mark, I mean, given that from the sound of it, we can't be very hopeful that Lula will actually get a fair, hearing, a fair sentence.
No, that's right.
Here. So, but is this then going to lead to some kind of constitutional crisis? Because the election is in October. Brazilian law doesn't allow anyone who's convicted of corruption for running for office. But the Workers' Party, they're saying that they're going to keep Lula on the ballot no matter what.
So. Well, I think that it's definitely not over if they uphold the sentence. I think, first of all, they have a dilemma that if they put him in jail, he'll be a martyr, and that could help the Workers' Party win. They might be afraid to do that. If they don't put him in jail, he can campaign for another candidate like he did for Dilma in 2010. And he really helped her get elected. So I think it's not over. As long as he's alive, he's going to be a major force in Brazil, in my opinion.
Right. But so, you know, with the threat to keep just, I know you have to dash, and we're practically out of time here. But you, from what you're saying, it seems likely that rather than him challenging the law by remaining on the ballot, that he would indeed support an alternative candidate of the Workers' Party?
It's not clear. I mean, I don't know what they'll do.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm saying that is one alternative, so they really won't be getting rid of him that easily, I think.
Right. And the guy who's the president right now, he's facing his own corruption charges, right? And, you know, not that much has happened with him. Just in the minute we have left, though, who are the other candidates now for the Brazilian election, Mark?
Well, sadly, there's only one that's in the running right now. I mean, Lula's at 36%, and Jair Bolsonaro is at 18%, and he's an extreme right. I mean, people have compared him to Trump, but he's even worse than that in terms of his racism and misogynist comments, and just overall, he supports the former military dictatorship. He's really
really bad news all around.
He's so far extreme that nobody like that has really run for office since they've had democratic elections.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the time of Trump, so we'll see the repercussions. And the racism is quite troubling. We know that Brazil has the largest population of people of African descent, you know, outside of the continent of Africa. This is a fact a lot of people don't know, and they have been up against dealing with racism and poverty and more. So we'll see how all of this plays out. Mark, we'll have you back. Things are definitely heating up. South of the border. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Margaret.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Now, Donald Trump is siding with Whirlpool and other U.S. corporations. They've slapped tariffs of up to 50% on imported washing machines. He's also slapped tariffs on imported solar cells and modules. South Korea, along with China, will be hit by these tariffs, hard hit. South Korea responded by asking for talks with the Trump administration, in addition to filing a formal complaint against the U.S. at the World Trade Organization. Now, let us go to a clip from Arirang News about all of this.
Now, U.S. President Donald Trump has signed authorizations for safeguard tariffs on imports of washing machines and solar panels, sparking an outcry in South Korea and around the world. Trump's decision is expected to deal a huge blow to South Korean manufacturers. As a result, it has prompted Seoul to consider filing a complaint with the World Trade Organization. Park So-yeon with the details.
Driven by President Trump's America First trade policies, the move marks the first time in 16 years for the United States to issue such safeguard measures. Trump on Tuesday signed into law tough new tariffs on imported washing machines and solar panels in a bid to create new jobs and protect U.S. manufacturers from foreign competition.
Our action today helps to create jobs in America for Americans. It will provide a strong incentive for LG and Samsung to follow through on their recent promises to build major manufacturing plants for washing machines right here in the United States. For both solar and washing machines, these executive actions uphold the principle of fair trade and demonstrate to the world that the United States will not be taken advantage of anymore.
President Trump also told reporters after signing the proclamations that there won't be a trade war. Under the measures, a 20% tariff will be imposed on imports for the first 1.2 million washers and 50% on all subsequent imports, with tariffs lowering in the next 2 years. Korea's Samsung and LG Electronics, as well as Hanwha Qcells and Hyundai Heavy Industries, are expected to be hit hard by the measures. Samsung and LG export a combined volume of 2.5 million washers to the U.S. every year, worth around $1 billion. Up in arms over the move, the South Korean government is planning to file a complaint with the World Trade Organization over what it calls a violation of WTO provisions.
All right, there you go. Now, the tariffs are getting some bipartisan support, including from Senator Sherrod Brown of Ohio, who says the move will bring jobs to a Whirlpool plant based in his state. But they've also alarmed several GOP representatives, including Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. Republicans who have expressed opposition worry about blowback that could cause U.S. cost, U.S. jobs, and standing in the world of trade. U.S. solar panel companies are also said to be on the losing end of the tariffs as they expect to pay more to produce solar panels. But the biggest losers in all of this seems to be you and I, consumers, who will be paying higher prices. A huge winner in the United States is Whirlpool Corporation, already the top major appliance manufacturer in the world, with $21 billion in annual sales, about 93,000 employees. They market their several brands to most countries in the world. And of course, Whirlpool praised Trump's decision and said that they're going to add 200 jobs to their Ohio plant. Now, mind you, they're going to be getting a windfall, likely a huge windfall. We can't even imagine the numbers. What most people don't know about Whirlpool Corporation, however, is that their international headquarters are based in Benton Harbor, Michigan, an overwhelmingly black and impoverished community. Now, Whirlpool plays a huge role in local politics in Benton Harbor, and they have been up against the black community for their land grabs, for their attempts to silence local black leaders, for corruption of local officials, and much more. And now they will even have more resources to carry on their war against the black community and the impoverished in Benton Harbor. So we would like to welcome back to Sojourner Truth the Reverend Edward Pinckney. Now, Reverend Pinckney is an outspoken critic of the takeover legislation affecting Benton Harbor, Michigan. He is the leader of the Black Autonomy Network community organization in Benton Harbor, and his activist work has garnered national attention on several occasions, including a campaign against Whirlpool Corporation and the Benton Harbor city government for corruption and racial prejudice. The Reverend Edward Pinckney has been imprisoned after being found guilty by an all-white jury on trumped-up charges of voter fraud in retaliation for a recall election he championed against the mayor of Benton Harbor. And since then, he was sent back to prison yet again. Same playbook. He is now out of prison, we're happy to say. Benton Harbor's population is 90% Black. Reverend Edward Pinckney is a longtime community activist, and he has been a thorn in the side of those in power, including Whirlpool Corporation. Reverend Pinckney, glad that you're out of prison, and so glad to have you back on the air.
Margaret Prescott, it is an honor and a privilege to be on your show. And I must tell you, no one is more happier than me and Dorothy that I am home and home at last. But continue to fight. See, the fight continues. And you was talking about Whirlpool themselves. See, Whirlpool, you got to understand, Fred Upton, the state representative, is the heir to Whirlpool. He's a Republican, and most of the tax breaks that they get were targeted towards Whirlpool. Whirlpool get $120 million energy tax break every single year, and they get a return of $64 million check. Like, you'd be waiting for your income tax checks to come. Every year, they wait for their income tax checks to come. And Benton Harbor being one of the poorest cities probably in the whole United States. And they asked Benton Harbor residents to give Whirlpool a $3,870,000 tax break, which is the most ridiculous thing that you have ever heard. And remember, Whirlpool has a monopoly on washer, dryers, and stove and refrigerators. They're the only company that you would ever hear that has been allowed to monopolize the washer, dryer, and the stove and refrigerator. And now they're even going to get bigger, you know, because they're going to make more money than ever before off this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, what benefit has the Black community? I mean, the community of Benton Harbor is overwhelmingly Black people. How has Whirlpool benefited the community? Or I should say, what are some of the problems the community has had with Whirlpool and their policies?
The number one problem, Whirlpool do not employ Black people who live in the city of Benton Harbor.
What? Even though their headquarters are there?
Their headquarters is here in the city of Benton Harbor, but they refuse to hire Black people. Here's the word that they said. Black people in Benton Harbor are not qualified to work in there, and not even, they don't have any factories here at all. None.
Mm.
Not one factory is located in the city of Benton Harbor. They have built a new headquarters here. Well, addition, I should say. And what they did during the building of the headquarters, they did not hire not one Black person to work on this building and inside the building. Now, I will say this. They do have Black people cleaning offices here.
You could be on the janitorial staff, right?
Right. Yeah. You can be on the janitorial staff and working here for Whirlpool. But other than that, you won't get very many, especially if they're from Benton Harbor. Now, you might get, they do have a couple of Africans there. I got to give them that. They do have a couple of Africans working in the building. But we're talking 4,000 employees that work here in the city of Benton Harbor, and less than a half percent is Black, even from other areas.
Yeah.
And nobody say anything.
That's
right. Here's the good news. We just passed an income tax, and that was one of the reasons they had sent me to prison in the first place, because I told them that we have to get some kind of fund from them, whether they like it or not. So let's levy an income tax on them to make sure that they pay some form of tax to the community of Fenton. They're using our roads, they're using our parks, they're using everything, and they're paying no dividends to the city of Benton Harbor.
Right, and they seem to be maintaining an almost apartheid-like situation with their employees in Benton Harbor. I mean, when you tell people about Benton Harbor and the situation at Benton Harbor, people really find it hard to believe, but it is absolutely real. I mean, that stat that you gave, about half of 1% out of 4,000 employees, black, mainly janitorial staff. But before, I want to talk with you about some of what's happening with the black community now, but what about this land grab that Benton Harbor has been involved in, that Whirlpool has been involved in Benton Harbor?
Absolutely. They stole 465 acres of land to build this Jack Nicklaus signature golf course and surround it with half a million out homes. And the bad part about it, they didn't pay anything for the land.
What?
And what there was, yeah, they didn't pay nothing for the land. Even the park, the park, they leased the park for $30,000, Gene Clark Park, the famous park with the beach and all this kind of stuff. But they had the right commissioners in there. See,
but wasn't that park? Wait a minute, but wasn't that the park? Because I've heard you talk about this before. That was left by somebody for the use of the black residents of Benton Harbor.
Absolutely, and it was left there by the Clark family. One of the wealthiest families here before they died, they did it many years ago, and it was supposed to be used for the residents. And what Whirlpool
and Benton
did,
and Whirlpool just took it.
Just took it. They came in, they put the 6th, 7th, and 8th hole in Gene Clark Park, and they felt that it was okay for some reason unknown. And here's the bad part. They took sand from our beach. We had the white sand from our beach and put it across the bridge onto their park because they didn't have the white sand like we had.
They took the sand from Benton Harbor to the white community across the river.
Across the river. And the only thing way we discovered it was that we found out that they were moving it by truck. Which was so incredible. And this is all, now remember this now, Fred Upton, the state rep, he's been in office for over 30 years.
Yeah.
And he's responsible for all of it. But we have to apply more pressure to Whirlpool.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that would really get them if we call for an international boycott of all Whirlpool products.
Yeah.
And that would be a tool that we can use against them for the simple reason, for all the things they have done to the black community here in the city of Benton Harbor will be the perfect weapon and the language to use in order to get this thing moving. Because nobody should have that much power over a community where they decide what to even educate our children. They're so involved in Benton Harbor that they even control the school system. And they want them to miseducate the black residents here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Reverend Pinckney, we know that Benton Harbor made international news after the killing a while back of a young black man T-shirt. This was before the whole rise of Black Lives Matter. And now you've got Martell Hadley, young man dying in custody inside Berrien County Jail in St. Joseph, which is the white part of Berrien County, and nobody really believes that that's happening. What we're going to have to do, Reverend Pinckney, is to go to our station break because we have our campaigners for Black Lives coming up, and they managed to campaign to get rid of the police chief, Charlie Beck, of Los Angeles. So we're going to need to go to that. But Reverend Pinckney, we'll have you back soon when you talk about all of what you're doing now, because I know you and Dara Dorothy, your partner there, your wife, y'all don't sit still. You were organizing in the when you were in prison, and now that you're out, Reverend Pinckney, try as they might, they just can't shut you up. And we're glad about that. Reverend Edward Pinckney, thank you so very much. All the best to Dorothy.
Thank you for having me.
All righty. We are going to bye-bye. We're going to take a short station break. And coming up, Campaigners for Black Lives with Dr. Melina Abdullah.
If God got us, then we gonna be all right.
Right, and the artist Kendrick Lamar, the song All Right. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning, for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives, click on Sojourner Truth. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety, and you can subscribe for a free podcast. You could also check us out on our website at www.sotrueradio.org. And if you're a member of Facebook, like and friend us on Facebook. You could also find us on SoundCloud. Just look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. And today we'd like to give a shout out to all of our SoundCloud listeners in the city of Benton Harbor, Michigan. And we are now going to turn our attention to our ongoing series, Campaigners for Black Lives. And Dr. Melina Abdullah is waiting to speak with us about LAPD Chief Charlie Beck being out. But first, let us hear a bit of what Melina had to say to the crowd of thousands at the last Saturday's Women's March in Los Angeles. Just a piece of what she had to say.
This is powerful. So I pray that the ancestors, that my ancestors, that Sojourner Truth, Harriet Tubman, Ida B. Wells, all of the women who struggled ahead of us, speak through us here today. We call on their spirits to embolden our movement. Yes? So we were here last year, and last year was a moment, right? Last year, we were all in shock that white folks, and I'm putting it on your shoulders, white folks, elected a raving white supremacist, misogynist, capitalist, heterosexist fool into the damn White House.
All right, so that was a fired up Melina Abdullah. She is with one of the longest members, I think, of Black Lives Matter anywhere, perhaps besides the founders. And she is a professor, author, community campaigner based in Los Angeles. She's professor and chair of the Pan-African Studies Department at California State University, Los Angeles. And there's a lot more I could say about her. She's the author of numerous articles, book chapters, but she is likely best known for being part of the leadership team for Black Lives Matter. Melina Abdullah, welcome.
Thank you, Sister Margaret. Thank you for having me, and thank you for the ongoing campaign, the ongoing Campaigners for Black Lives series that you're doing.
Right, and thank you for partnering with us for that series. We're really very happy to do it. So there, we're going to talk about Charlie Beck, because I don't think anybody believed, Melina, when Black Lives Matter LA started the campaign to get rid of Charlie Beck, that you would actually succeed. But prior to that, tell us a little bit about your comments at the Women's March.
Sure. Well, I think it's really important that we lift up that white folks put us in this situation, and white folks have a responsibility. If they think that the situation is bad, they have a responsibility to do the work to get us out of it. And so it's not enough for people to be marching with pink hats on for one day. They need to be helping to do the organizing work that's necessary to overturn white supremacy, to overturn also Zionism. You know, we had a, I know you played Tandiwe's speech yesterday, but it's really important that we, you know, stand with the people of Palestine and not allow this kind of call for, they tried to issue a call for unity. We can't be standing in unity around oppression. We have to be united for justice. And so we're calling on folks who have privilege to use their privilege to dismantle the systems that keep the rest of us oppressed.
Right. And so now tell us about the beef of Black Lives Matter and, well, several others with Charlie Beck and his tenure as police chief of Los Angeles.
Sure. So Charlie Beck has been the chief of police now for 8 years, and he has led the way in the murdering of residents at the hands of police. LAPD leads the nation in killing its residents. For 7 of the 8 years of Charlie Beck's tenure, it's led the way. And Charlie Beck, the reason that this happens is because Charlie Beck is really condones police abuse and brutality. We can remember the cadet scandal when he called the rape of a 14-year-old girl at the hands of a 30-something-year-old police officer relationship, a sexual relationship, as if a 14-year-old can engage in a sexual relationship. You know, that's a rape, right? We can remember how after the murderers of Ezell Ford, Charlton Wampler and Antonio Villegas were found to be out of policy, you know, in violation of LAPD policy, in the murder of Ezell Ford in 2014, he issued a closed-circuit television statement to his officers that he would protect them, the mayor would protect them, like the vests that they wear. And so Charlie Beck has really been, you know, we know that overall policing is an issue, and, you know, we are committed to dismantling the police state. We also know that Charlie Beck is among the worst of the worst, right? And so getting him out was a huge victory. 2.5 years ago, we called on the mayor to fire Charlie Beck, and we kept up that pressure. For 2.5 years, we camped out, we wore T-shirts, we called every single day to the mayor's office, we issued petitions, we did all of this work, and I think what the victory shows us is that as long as we struggle, we can win. And so we have to engage in the struggle for the freedom of our people. And there's never been a time when we've lost. We always win as long as we keep the struggle going. And so it was a huge morale booster to see Charlie Beck, who had been really adamant that he was going to serve out this term, which doesn't end until the end of 2019. So he has almost 2 years to go on his term. He was adamant that he was going to serve it out. And we say the people fired Charlie Beck.
Right. And as you say, you know, if we don't struggle, we don't win, because we can't win if we don't struggle. And I think the lesson in all of this is that was proved by Black Lives Matter Los Angeles, that no matter how daunting it seems, you know, the whole thing about you can't fight City Hall. Well, guess what? You can, because there is power with the people there. So tenure, as you say, was marked by controversy also over his approach to disciplining police officers, or I should say lack of disciplining police officers. But, you know, Beck himself has been a problem, but also you all have been very outspoken about the district attorney of Los Angeles, and she's Black, a Black woman.
She is Black in color. we have to remember the words of Zora Neale Hurston: all skin folk ain't kin folk.
Right.
And You know,
could be black and a white supremacist.
Yeah, exactly. We always call it a black face on white supremacy, right? And, you know, it's important that we have representatives who are not just descriptively black, but who actually represent the interests of the black community. And, you know, we gave Jackie Lacey a chance. We, again, did petitions. We did calls. We had meetings early on with her, right? And we really tried to get her to engage around this question of police killings. So just for the listeners, in Los Angeles County, under Jackie Lacey, in the last 5 years, upwards of 300 people have been killed by law enforcement. Not a single officer has been charged in any of those killings. Prosecutions for any of those officers. So for 16 weeks, we've been outside of Jackie Lacey's office demanding that she prosecute killer cops. That's our hashtag, prosecute killer cops. We've been standing. What's beautiful about these demonstrations is the families are really at the center of it. And so we've been standing with the families in front of her office for 16 weeks now. And we're finally saying, look, if Jackie Lacey will not do her job and prosecute the police who kill our people, it's time for her to step down. So we had a massive community meeting yesterday. Over 100 folks showed up on Skid Row at Los Angeles Community Action Network, one of our partners in this work, and we settled on we want Jackie Lacey out of there because she doesn't represent the people. And her literal title when she's prosecuting cases is the people. So if she is not representing the people, she's not doing her job.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people are hopeful given the election in Philadelphia of Larry Krasner as district attorney because he is anti-death penalty. You know, he has been in the past. We'll see what he does now. A supporter of Mumia, Abu Jamal and Mumia, you know, is his case is going to be back in prison. So is the case of in the courts. So is the case of Tyree Carroll, who was the young black man who was beat down by 26 cops caught on video in Philadelphia. So it seems as though, I mean, that was seen as a victory for the people because a lot of people who are for prisoners' rights and against mass incarceration of all colors came together and helped to push a candidate like Larry Krasner. So with the campaign to get rid of Jackie Lacey, are you then hoping that she will be replaced by somebody, you know, who, as you say, isn't like a black face on white supremacy as you define her?
Absolutely. I mean, I think what Krasner's victory shows is that, again, these are odds that people didn't think we could win, right?
Yeah.
Because he came up against the police union. The police union was clear they did not want him in office, but the people were victorious. And so I think that what he illustrates, and, you know, he's newly elected, so we don't want to give him too much credit before it's due.
Right.
But I think that what he illustrates and what he says he stands for shows that there are different models that people can adopt. So we want to make sure that, you know, we tried to recruit Nana Jomfee to run against Jackie Lacey last time. She refused.
My sister Nana, I imagine she would have.
Several of us wrote in her name nonetheless. but we need to make sure that we get someone in office who is really committed to serving the people. And it's possible to get folks in there. We see victories in places like Newark, New Jersey, where Raz Baraka is mayor, Chokwe Antar Lumumba in Jackson,
yeah,
Mississippi. We have examples of people-centered elected officials.
Right, absolutely. Well, on that note, we'll have to wait for the next session of Campaigners for Black Lives because we are out of time now. But before going, though, Melina Abdullah, how can people get involved? Where can they go? Who should they call to support your efforts?
So we hope that everybody will come out to the Prosecute Killer Cops actions. Please follow us on Twitter at BLMLA, on Instagram we're BLM Los Angeles, and on Facebook we're Black Lives Matter Los Angeles.
Okay. Dr. Malina Abdullah, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you.
All righty. We are out of time. Today's show produced by myself, Margaret Prescott. We'd like to thank all of today's guests and the Sojourner Truth team, our intern, Sherelle Withers, assistant producer, Stephanie Case, and our engineer, Mr. T. Teddy Robinson, and all who helped to make the show possible. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0233.
Good morning. It's 8:57, and this is KBOO Portland. Coming up, it's Press Watch with Teresa Mitchell, all of the news you're not supposed to know. At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Flashpoints at 10:15 with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on Between the Covers, anti-capitalist, feminist, and anti-racist writing from poet Eunsong Kim and her book, Gospel of Regicide. And at 11:30, it's a special presentation of Stage and Studio and an Oregon Treasures documentary on legendary Portland writer Ursula K. Le Guin. KBOO keeps you informed, and you can get involved by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate to become a member. It's 8:58, and Press Watch is coming up right now.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Spontaneous Combustion New Music Festival, happening January 19th through February 10th at the Old Church in Portland. The Spontaneous Combustion New Music Festival features seven new music performers, performing works by living composers, both well-known and lesser-known, as well as some works by recently deceased 20th century composers. Music by Lou Harrison, Jacob Druckmann, Julia Wolf, David Lang, and many, many more. Again, that's the Spontaneous Combustion New Music Festival, happening January 19th through February 10th at the Old Church, 1422 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.